No.
Okay, back at you guys. I was on at 8 a.m. This is Option Professor, optionprofessor.com, optionprofessor@gmail.com. And so basically, in the morning, we went over the VIX, and we're going to go over that again. Let me just make sure everybody can see the screen that I've got. Everybody can see the VIX screen?
Yep.
And okay. Just for everyone listening to the recording, Wally, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself again real fast.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I just finished my presentation an hour ago, and really, I'm just on here with Jim again from Right Side Trading. So that is what I am here for. We're just kind of like talking to Jim. I want to know his input on this whole FOMC meeting. Where are we going from here, Jim?
Well, the FOMC meeting was about as surprising as water being wet to me, because you know, they certainly aren't going to do any massive hiking, but they certainly have got to start tapering emergency accommodation. So basically, that was the result of it, and that again is no shock to anybody. But it does confirm that we are in the process of taking away accommodation, which means taking away liquidity. As a matter of fact, for people who know anything about the money supply, it was growing at like 27% earlier in the year, and it's down to 12%. Still a high number. But again, it's tightening from where it was. Tapering is going to be the same story. So they are withdrawing some liquidity from the market. Now, I'm going to put up the VIX here, and I'm going to give my little spiel on the VIX that I talked about earlier. Actually, I'm going to go back to everything I showed in the beginning. So we're going to look at the VIX over the last 20 years or so, right? And you're going to get an idea of exactly how I look at it, because I've been doing this for decades, and I'm the option professor, right? So let's hope I know a little bit about the options, right? Okay. So I'm no stranger to volatility. If you're an option trader and you don't know what volatility is, you better, you know, hang it up. So anyway, as you can see, my view on the VIX is if it's between 15 and 20, the market is generally fairly stable and probably going higher. If it's between 10 and 15, the market is very complacent and probably been going higher, but also susceptible for a big drop. But the most important thing as far as danger is concerned is when the VIX gets above 20 and 30. Now we're going back 30 years here. And you can see in the late 90s, we had long-term capital, and many of you may have not been in it, but I'll give you a little history lesson. We had long-term capital management had a little problem, kind of like this guy, Evergrande, you know, liquidity. So obviously the VIX jumped above 20 and spiked all the way up to 40, and the market went in the tank then too. Then the market goes on a rally, so the VIX comes back down. And then again, it breaks above 20 and 30 in the crash. And obviously, you know, we lost 60% of the S&P during that drop. So anything when it breaks above 20 is a yellow flag. And when it breaks above 30, it's a red flag all over the place. And if it breaks above 40, you don't want to be anything near it. So there's your evidence and there's your time frame. So you had the long-term capital management in 98, then you had the crash of 01, then you had the mother of all crashes, the great financial crisis, and then you shut down the entire economy on COVID. And so basically, when you see it go up to 80 and 90, you know for sure the Fed is coming, okay? And even if it goes up above 40, the plunge protection team or whatever that little thing is all about, they're coming out, okay? Because we are seeing an unraveling of the system. And when you see an unraveling of the system, that's when they come in and they print money and they create 14, they created 14 entities so they could buy all these different things during the crash of March of last year, right? I mean, because the Fed can't go out and buy it. They have to loan money to the Treasury, who then can go out and buy it. So they open these facilities to get around the 1913 Act, which tells you that the Fed can only buy like treasuries and things like that. People don't understand that, but I do, because I've been watching it a long time. So again, because I'm always shocked, you know, in other words, like in this thing in 08, the great financial crisis, I didn't know they could print unlimited money called QE. They didn't do it ever before, right? And then of course, during this crash here, you know, everybody was going broke, right? The states, munis were going in the dumper, corporate bonds, Carnival Cruise was at, you know, ridiculous interest rates. I remember I was looking at 35% interest on Occidental Petroleum bonds, 35% 10 year. That's if you put $1 million in, you get 350 grand a year guaranteed by Occidental Petroleum. Obviously, it was a great deal. Those yields aren't around anymore. But the bottom line is when yields get like that, the system is unraveling. So, you know, the Fed is going going to be printing and coming up with all kinds of behind the back passes, whatever they have to do to stabilize the system. So that's why the VIX is very important. You don't want to be selling your stocks when it goes to 70 or 80. You want to be buying at that point, knowing that the Fed, go with quality, obviously, knowing that the Fed's going to come in and do something to make liquidity better and make asset values rebound. And this time, because they printed so many ridiculous dollars, I mean, you know, the Fed's balance sheet is like exploded to the upside. This rebound was extremely fast. Okay. In other words, we went from 80 all the way down here to like underneath 20 in a very short period of time because they printed a ridiculous amount of money. And so, and they continue to run up debts and everything else. So here they were much more moderate and it took much more time for the rebound to occur. So again, if you're looking at the VIX, the broad strokes on it are 10 to 15. You're in a very sanguine market and probably relatively going higher. If you are in a 15 to 20, it's getting a little bit more volatile, but still probably a nice uptrend for you, particularly if your RSI is above 50. You start breaking above 20, that's the yellow flag. You break above 30. Now, again, Monday it went to 28. If we would have broke 30, it would have been a different story the rest of the week. But here we stopped at 30. So the bottom line is that 30 number I would keep an eye on. Because if it starts breaking above 30, then you're probably looking at another drop and maybe a further drop, you know, which right now doesn't look like it's happening. But if the VIX starts breaking 30, believe me, it'll start happening. So again, now I'm going to bring it into a shorter term situation because I talked about this at 8 o'clock in the morning and it worked out pretty much as I thought. But again, you know, it's still got an hour to go or so. I'm going to show you like in the last 5 days.
Hey, Jim, there's a question over here by Brad talking about how.
Sure, Brad. I don't have any Adventa program, but what else do you have?
So he said, you know, the VIX basically is above 20 and Evergrande, but has dropped back down. Do we take this Evergrande situation seriously?
Well, of course, you take it seriously. But again, you know, what were you really thinking? On Monday, they thought that because, again, what a great coincidence. China's closed until Wednesday.
Yep.
And they come out with the news on this thing about their missing payments. So yep. Obviously, people started running on, you know, they love to dump the stock market and then grab everybody's stock in a panic. I mean,
that's you said it on Monday, time. Too, when we had that call on Monday. You
yeah,
said
of course.
It exactly.
I mean, in other words, it was obvious they were dumping it on stupid news. Again, the Chinese government was closed, so they didn't know what they were going to do. What do you think they were going to do? I mean, this is the second biggest builder. There's people wrapped around the block that are protesting that they're going to not get their apartments. You've got peripheral risk with the collateralized loan obligations, etc. So of course they're going to come in and do something, and that's what they're doing now. Now, it might not be as sweet as people think, but it's going to call the dogs off, which is what they've done. They've called the dogs off.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is it's $300 billion, which in this world, I mean, the Fed prints $120 billion a month. Yeah. So you don't understand what $300 billion means? It means nothing. The thing that would mean something is if the Chinese stood back and let the whole system implode, and they're not going to do that. They don't have any money in that. So the bottom line is now, listen, if you're a bondholder, you're going to get tagged. If you own the stock, you're going to get tagged. But if you're owed an apartment, you're probably going to get it. And if you work for that company, they're probably going to do something so you still have a job. That's basically, I think, the way it's going to work out because that's what their interests are. Their interests are not protecting the bondholder and protecting the stockholder like the Fed, where they'll run the deficit up through the roof so people don't lose on their bonds and stocks. That's not the Chinese are very well aware of what risks you take when you buy bonds. The risk is obviously credit risk, okay, and default risk, right? And so the bottom line is that if those risks come to fruition, tough luck. And then the other thing on the stock, you're gambling on future earnings. If the company doesn't have any earnings, you bet wrong. So bottom line is that's how I think they're going to operate. They're going to protect the guys who are supposed to get their apartments. They're going to protect the employees. And if they have any extra time, they'll worry about the shareholder and they'll worry about the, I mean, if they were worried about the shareholder, they wouldn't have nationalized the education system, right? I mean, you imagine holding all those stocks that now are non-for-profit. I mean, you know, so that's basically it. And so
do you think there's no systemic risk to the, you know, to the US across the US for this?
I don't think it's significant. Let's put it that way. I think obviously people who get tagged on certain things, you know, if BlackRock owns a bunch of their stuff, they're going to get tagged on it. They already already been tagged. The bonds are trading 20 cents on the dollar. So they only got 20 more cents to go. And the stock is going for $2.
Wow.
So you know what I'm saying? I mean, talking about this company is like talking about, you know, yesterday's news, because it already has been discounted. You know, people don't get that. That's why it's so silly how they manipulate the mentality of investors. The market wasn't going down just because of that. It was going down because the Fed's taking away accommodation. It's going down because the valuations are 23-1 PE ratio, and that's not sustainable.
So let's talk about that though, Jim. Yeah. Like,
but I wanted to get into, Let me go into one thing, what I talked about in the morning. Okay. What I said in the morning is that the VIX was dropping down to 20.75, and that is filling the gap. Can you see the gap there on the chart? The market gapped up to 29 from the 21 area. So we came down and we filled the gap. Okay. The other thing I said is that the moving averages on the S&P at the 50 day, which I'm going to show you right now, comes in at around 44.35. Okay. And that the easy wood was being chopped between yesterday's close and 44.50, 44.35. So we fell, this thing really began to tank as it broke under 43.60. So my position is this, is if this VIX does not get underneath 20 and 18, and we do not get above 44.50, 45, 44.60 ballpark, right? Then this thing has a very reasonable chance of rolling right back down again. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I think until you see that occur, again, you run the risk of the VIX going back down to 20 and now spiking again. You run the risk of everyone who covered their shorts and did a spec buy and ran back in here because everyone on TV saying buy the dip. You might find a situation where the news may again moderate again, because again, the Fed made it very clear that they are going to start taking away the emergency accommodation. Now, you know, and like I say, whether we'll get a hike or anything like that, you know, we're at what, 0.25 on the Fed funds rate. I mean, it probably at least belongs at 0.5. But at any rate, so that's the way I was seeing it. And of course, we did have a nice little drop after, I'll put the day up there. It was a nice trade to be had today. We went up to 44.16, you'll see. And as you can see, once the Fed talked, it went all the way back down to 43.80, 43.85. So that was about a 30 point drop in the S&P. That's not a bad trade right there. And again, right now, we are around on the, I'm looking at SPX. I got it around 44.05. Is that where it is? Or
yeah, I believe so. 44. Let me see. Let's see here. SPX. Yeah, 44.04, 44.05.
Yeah. So again, like I say, you know, you've got very good resistance because that was where we broke from 44.50, 44.60. And then you got a 44.35, which is the 50-day moving average. And that's very nice resistance. And then you've got support on the VIX, which we just showed you at around the 20 area. And so if you cannot get that VIX in the 2018 area and you cannot get above the 44.35, 44.60 area, then I would keep a little powder dry, and I would look for more proof that the lows are in. Again, I totally hear everybody. The end of the third quarter is coming next week, and I understand that earnings are coming, but you know, earnings are supposed to be, the expectation is they're going to be very, very good. And if they, if any of them come out looking anything like FedEx, it will be not very good, because FedEx, just to give you an idea, people in the last 10 days were riding along thinking they were in a very solid company. And then of course, everyone's doing e-commerce. So these guys are going to make out like bandits, right? So you're hanging around here in the 260 range. And the next thing you know, they say things aren't that great and we have a lot of problems, and boom, you know, you're from 230 to 260 to 230 in a very short period of time. So again, you know, the long-term trends of stocks are still up, but you're looking at a situation where the support, if we break this 4,300 that we just made on Monday, then, you know, that opens the door to a whole different kind of correction. If we hold the 4,300 and we start breaking above 44.60 and the VIX gets into the under 2018 numbers, then of course I'd be on the train all the way that Q4 is going to be exactly what people say, which is what? 4,700 by the end of the year, 4,800 by the end of the year, you know, everything is going to be great. COVID's going away. Here comes the reopening. Then it's going to work like that. But, you know, again, I would like to see more technical proof before I put that on, because the popularity of that opinion is scary right off the bat. So that was the way I was seeing it. I'm going to throw it over to Wally here and let him give you a few 2 cents and put a couple of other charts up while he's talking.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think, you know, you're actually on point. I do agree with the fact that at this stage, the fact that the Fed is, you know, easing off, it wasn't anything brand new that we didn't think about. The question really becomes, you know, how is this going to affect things going forward? And the only thing I can like refer back to is when the first quantitative easing, or at least the last quantitative easing, I should say, occurred back in 2015, where that was probably the first time we really started experiencing what that looked like. And I remember when everybody was screaming, oh my goodness, this is it, the end of the world, Armageddon, you know, Jesus is coming back kind of situation. Market fell for a little bit, right? But then by February 2016, it just bottomed out and just took off from there. And so it's very interesting how, yes, they started easing off on this quantitative easing, but the market seemed to digest that and take it well. And so I'm looking at this right now and saying, I don't see anything too different. Yes, we're in more debt, but it seems like even other countries around the world are learning to adapt the same thing. We saw Japan do the same thing. Other countries are starting to adopt the same concept of just borrowing more money, borrowing more money. The question I know everybody's asking is, when is this going to end? And when are we going to see the fallout? I think you mentioned something which I thought was very key, and I'm not sure if people paid attention to what you said. And that was, if the VIX gets to after 40, and especially by the time it gets to 80, you could expect the Fed to come in, you know? And that's exactly what happened.
By the way, they're going to come in, but you're going to be very bloody at that point.
At that point, you're correct.
In other words, it's lovely that they come in, but it's what power they come in with. If they come in with the power of 08, you're going to wait a long time to get your money back. Yes. If they come in like this again, Lord knows what the dollar would be worth. I mean, you know, how much printing can you do before people start saying, we got the Zimbabwe dollar? I mean, come on, the national debt is like 140% of our GDP now. When we went into this thing, it was 75. I mean, there has to be a point where people get a pencil and paper and they do the math.
True, I agree. But then what do we do in the meantime, you know?
No, well, like I say, in the meantime, you know, what I think is you got your line in the sand right now at 44.60 ballpark, 44.35 ballpark, and you got your VIX at under 20. If you don't see those two things, I'd be careful until then, because again, the popularity of this market has never been more popular. I'm going to put a 20-year graph up again so everybody knows. I mean, I play this thing from the long side, but I keep things on a very short leash. The reason I keep it on a short leash is I know where we are, okay? And we are at this level here, and there's a 20-year graph. Does that look high or low to you if you were in third grade? Okay. And these are the moving averages. Have you ever in the history of the last 20 years seen it that far away from the moving averages? And does anyone know what the word reversion to the mean means? Okay. So I'll give you a very good scenario. Either A, they're going to keep interest rates very, very low, and we're going to get away with valuations of 23 to 1 on the PE ratio on the S&P, or they're not. And if they're not going to keep the PE ratio at 23 to 1, and it's going to contract like it did in China down towards more like 18 to 1. If we have $210 of earnings on the S&P and it went to 18 to 1 PE rather than the 22, 23 it is now, you'd be looking at 37.80. And you notice 37.80 is just like midway between where these averages are and basically anything. So like I say, if we take out 4,300, I would have to say 4,100, the 200-day moving average is in play. And, you know, they always bring it down more than you think. And so, you know, I would just be careful. Like I say, I would love to see the thing go to 5,000 on the S&P. And how would that get there? Next year is supposed to be 240 in earnings, according to JP Morgan. And that's 240. And if you multiply it by 23, you're at 5,520 on the S&P. Does that sound like a probability? Not really to me, but it could happen. Now, if you just went to 22 area or so, then you're going to be at around 5,200 on the S&P. So you could get a 5,000 handle on the S&P next year if the earnings are 240 as they expect and if the valuations don't shrink. But I think one of those two things is not going to happen. But, you know, like I say, I'm looking for evidence. There's no evidence. The thing's still going up. But the first evidence I thought was breaking under 4,500.
Yeah.
And the next evidence is going to be the inability, if it is unable, to get back above 4,460. Because like I say, the road to 4,600, it has to go through 4,460. It has to go through 4,510.
Yep.
And those are my two key resistance points. So like I say, in this trading game, you never are or a concrete man, you have to be flexible. And that's why when it rolls over, you have to say, you know what, no matter what they say on TV, I'm cutting and running here. you know, if this thing goes down to 4,300 from 4,550 and you've got $1 million in there, you know, that $1 million is going to be dropping pretty well. And if they break 4,300 and it goes down to 4,000, you know, depending upon the stocks you own, you're going to get whacked pretty hard as far as your thing. So that's why with the options, I'm always talking about collars where you sell the out of the money call and you buy the put with the money you took in on the call. And now you've got parameters around your equity. At least that's, you know, at this point, that looks better than holding on, hoping that everybody on TV is right. And then replacement trades where you ditch the stock and you put a call spread on. If it keeps running, you got a call spread. If it goes in the tank, I mean, let's put it this way. I'll just put up FedEx as an example, because this is a good company. This is not a bad company. You know, we're not talking about a company going out of business. I mean, True. This is delivering all the stuff from e-commerce, right?
Exactly.
So again, it goes up to 320 here, which was when? Back in May. So obviously a lot of things peaked in May. The transports peaked in May. FedEx, obviously. Now look how far away you were from moving averages. This is my whole point. So if it gets up here to 320 and you see you're 9 miles away from land, why not sell the 330 call and buy the 300 put? And now you have the right to sell at 300. And everybody who just sat there like Buddha, they're at 229 hoping it goes back up. So again, optionprofessor@gmail.com is an open email. If you have questions on anything like this, I've been doing it for decades. You should shoot me questions, give me some contact information, and I can talk to you over the phone like I'm talking now. And at least I'll give you the use and the risk of some of these tactics. And then when and if you ever employ them is all up to you, but I could make sure you understand how these tools work. And then they don't, and of course, what the risk is. Of course, if the thing goes from 320 up to 420 and you've sold the 330 call, you know, you've capped your gain. So that's a negative. That didn't happen, but that would be an opportunity risk. So again, you know, this can happen to any company as soon as they are extended and as soon as the news changes. And I showed you the S&P chart. At some point between now and 22, are we not going to have anything that moves us back to the mean? That's the question.
And wasn't that a divergence up there at the top right there?
Or no? On which one?
On the FedEx, who was the top right there?
Let me just throw up the RSI and see if that gave us any hint. RSI. Well, of course, all this up here, was the high on the, this was the high on the RSI here. Never made a new high.
Yep.
And there you go. You got your divergence as well. Hey, listen, you know, there's things you can do anyway. If you sold the 330 call and bought the 300 put and it goes to 330, you can buy back that call and roll a higher one. So, I mean, if you know anything about options, and after decades, I certainly know a lot about them. You know, I know where the exits are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in other words, you know, if I put on a situation like sell the 330 call, buy the 300 put, so I make sure I protect all this money that went from 100 to 300. You know, I'm trying to protect the $300 deal. If it starts going to 330 and I think that I've made a mistake, you buy it back. Don't forget, you still own the underlying stock, so that's going up. So you buy back the call and maybe you roll it up to 350 or 360, depending upon what you think's happening next. Or maybe you just bite the bullet and say, I made a mistake here a little bit and I'll let it run. So you can always adjust the positions if you know how options work. And that's why I say there's a lot of people trading out options and I don't know that they know half of what they should know. So that's why I say at optionprofessor@gmail.com, you can shoot me an email with your contact information. And if any of this stuff seems like it makes sense, but you need more clarity, I'd be more than happy to talk to you.
Awesome. Now, what do you think about like what the market should probably do for the rest of this quarter?
Well, like I say, I have parameters, and my parameters are this. Right now, we have a parameter of 4,300. We know that's the low because that's been the low of the pullback. So that's a parameter. And then I know the resistance is there because I can see where the market peaked. Broke from. Let me put that up here real quick. We know where the market broke from, and we know where the market broke from, and we know where We know where the moving averages are. Let's get this off here and get that up there. And I'll show you a little bit on the short-term trading, because I'll show you something on FedEx that I had up earlier today. So we go to the 1 year here and we see that's a break, right? And we can see all the averages. Look where the averages are. They're all right where I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The moving averages are all coming into play here. 44.50, 44.60. So you see, if we get back above here, I'm not going to stay neutral to negative, which I am right now, neutral to negative. I'll say, well, the winds of change are blowing, but I got the RSI still under 50. Now it's trying to go back up, but the RSI is at 44. So if this thing starts to fail again, it's going to be a situation where that RSI is going to stay under 50. And these averages, the longer you stay underneath them, you know, and like I say, in the past, this goes back to last year, it doesn't stay under the 36 SMA very long. Back up, back up, back up, back up, very quick. This thing's already been two bars underneath it. I haven't seen two bars underneath it the whole ride. This is going back a year.
Yeah, that's a good
so
point.
The bottom line is that the longer it stays underneath here, I think the more negative. So you want this thing next week trading above my numbers of 4460. You want them. You want it. Because if you see it continue there, then this RSI is going to deteriorate. That's not good. And these moving averages are going to continue to roll over, which is not good. But this is really the crunch time for this stuff. And again, sometimes what it does is it comes underneath it and then it jams out of here. That's what I'm trying to say is that I am very willing to change my tune once the numbers dictate it. You know, in other words, there's no way we start breaking 4460, 4500, you know, and I'm going to stay negative and let it go to 4700 without me.
But
I don't want to hold something that looks like it's ticking.
If yeah, I think one of the things that you mentioned is like that moving average. We got to see it break that moving average first.
Uh-huh. Now, again, I'll give you some good news. On a long-term graph, this green line has been lovely. This is the 24 SMA going back on a five-year basis, and it just got tested right here. So that's why this 4,300 number is, if you want to trade against it, it's not a bad deal. But it's right in a window here of the 12 SMA, which comes in at 44.26, and today's high is 44.18. So 44.26 is another number. If it starts getting above there, that's another sign that it's turning. Okay, so 44.26 is a number I would find, positive. 44.35 is your 50-day moving average. 44.60 is where those averages are converging. So there's three numbers there that if the thing can get above them and stick for more than an hour, it would get me thinking that this is just a pullback. And yes, all the whole crowd that says buy the dip is right. But right now, I don't think I have enough evidence to say they're right. So that's the only reason I'm, you know, thinking like that.
Yeah, that's good. I like that idea. You don't have enough evidence, you know, and I think that's one of the things I try to like emphasize with people. What evidence are you using to make your decisions?
And how aggressive you want to be. Yeah, if you're an aggressive guy, you should be buying on this drop and you should be getting out on a new low of 4,300. So again, if you're an aggressive trader, for sure, you'd want to be trading against that 4,300. And as far as this is also supposed to be trading the news, of course you got to trade the news. And again, the news was going to be better. China is not going to go out there. They got a $14, $15 trillion economy against our $22 trillion. They're not going to let everything go crazy down. They've got a lot of vested interest. They may have a different approach called communism, which Ray Dalio was talking about, is more of a top-down approach. Yep. Where, like say they think video games are bad for their kids, they're not going to go to Congress and ask them to do anything. So from top down, they just tell people it's bad, you know, it's no good and you can't do it. Whereas we would go through Congress and everything from bottom up. And by the time they passed any restrictions on video games, the kids would be 40. You know?
That's a good one. Now, I agree with you on that. Right now, my biggest thing is I'll wait till tomorrow to kind of see what price does. If it continues going higher, you know, there's a concept there that if you had two green candles back to back from a pullback, I like the fact that you're talking about that green line right there. To pay attention to that. If you look at it since the drop that we had in 2020, that green line has stood as a really, really good support level.
No doubt. And again, the direction of the blue line is very important too. That's why, again, when we had the break down here, and even the 20-year graph is even better because, you know, if you're a long-term holder of stock, this is what I'd look at. This thing went bullish in 2000 right after the crash, and it gave you a ride from 2000 all the way to 2008, 2007. So you got out before the crash because it broke. These things crossed and broke. So you're out there. And you got back in here pretty much at about 1,000 on the S&P, and you've been riding it all the way up. Now, when it breaks, even when it breaks like this, if the direction of the average is still up and they get it back above the average, then this is just what they call a false alarm. Because again, and I'm sure the Fed and these people see this as well. You don't think they can see that when it breaks here, that they better get it above here and get it going again as fast as possible, or else even down here, you can't see that they can't see that this is bad. So again, this is 2008, 2009. By 2010, 12 months, they got this thing back up again because they need to get this thing. They need assets to be rising. They can't have assets assets tanking. So they get it right back above by whatever means necessary. This was called QE. Now, this was a big drop here, right? So they had to do QE on steroids because they needed to get this avalanche of selling to get back above the blue line within a month.
Absolutely.
And when they did that, that's your buy signal at 2,800. That's where you should be loading up the wagon. But now again, we're frothy. Valuations are high. Likelihood of GDP to contract from these higher levels is pretty good. Likelihood that some surprises are going to happen in 2022, pretty good. The political scene next year, I have no idea what it's going to be like, but I'm sure it's going to be volatile and hostile. When they start going against each other again, Republican, you know, the midterms.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know how nasty that's going to get? It's going to be a joke. And then, like I say, they are taking away accommodation because they can see they did too much. Anybody could see they put too much in here. That's how you got up here. And so they're starting to say about withdrawing it. I never understood why the Fed thinks it's so important to make assets get this high before they do anything to taper. I mean, you would think that they would want moderate growth, like here, moderate growth. And then even here, moderate. But then, of course, after they do QE, boom, it's not moderate anymore. And all they do is really create bubbles and busts, right?
Yep.
Because, I mean, these housing prices went up 25%. You think they're going up another 25%? Or do you think at some point they might pull back?
Question, what's your thought on this whole memorandum about all these tenants not being able to pay their rent? How do you think that's going to affect the market? You have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I heard but here's the thing. Foreclosures have really spiked since they took off the moratorium, but they're still not as high as they were in 2019. Mm, so that told me that maybe it's not as big of a problem. Hmm. Not to mention with interest rates this low and people's stock portfolios going up and the hiring, they're getting more wages and households are, you know, in pretty good shape. You know, maybe there's enough liquidity out there. I mean, and everyone's looking to place money. In other words, you know, nobody's keeping their money in the bank if they want to make anything.
That's true.
So you got people with hard money loans out there. You got people doing real estate deals. You've got people, you know, they're loaning money out on high yield debt for less than a real yield. In other words, if you take the yield minus the inflation rate, it's negative. So you're not even getting a positive real return on junk bonds. Mm. So, I mean, that's an environment where obviously that's one of the biggest underpinning in stock is the negative real yield on bonds.
Very good point. Excellent point.
But so like I say, but I mean, that doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, it's like those payday loans. You don't loan to people who are coming in for a payday loan and not get pinched.
True. There's a question by Brad over here. He's asking, where are you from? That's what he said. Are you in Canada?
I grew up back east. I went to Boston College. And so I'm basically originally from the tri-state area.
Nice. Well, the market seems to be doing pretty well for today. Again, I would say any continuation that we get starting tomorrow might actually be the signal of this bottom. You know, we were asking on Monday, you said, do we see the market ending at above 4,400? Well, what's your take on that now? Do you still think that we could end in the next couple of days above 4,400?
Well, we may do that. You know, I'm not Nostradamus. You know, I go with the flow. And so basically, I'm going to be keeping to my number because, you know, the numbers are real, the moving averages. That's why I love using moving averages, which don't work that good in a choppy market. Sure. I'll be the first one to admit that. Sure. But, most markets are only choppy short term. I mean, as you can see, there's a 20-year graph on the S&P. You know, you had a little bit of a chop here, you know, for a very short time, but then it trends. Then you had a little bit of a pullback, but it wasn't really chop. It was a pullback, you know, and then you had a pullback. So, you know, there's not really that much chop on longer term trends. That's why I like to look at them because it tells me where the main freeway is. I mean, the main freeway is still I-95 North. You know, the thing is, you know, the gas station's at 3,400 and the car's at 4,600 and it may have to come back and get some gas, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's what, and the further away it gets from the gas station and the more the tank is getting empty because, you know, there's not unlimited people to buy into the market. There's not unlimited earnings in the world, you know? And so the bottom line is and there's not unlimited valuations. You know, anybody who's ever been in real estate knows that sometimes they'll pay you $1,000 a square foot for your property and sometimes they'll pay you $600, you know? So that's the same thing with stock. You know, sometimes they'll pay you 15-to-1 PE. Sometimes they'll pay you 22-to-1. Some of these internet stocks, there's no earnings. And so they're doing it on price to sales, which obviously is an extremely dangerous way to buy into anything.
Yeah, yeah.
This QuantumScape, which is a very good company for research, et cetera. I was listening to somebody and they're not expecting to earn $1 for the next 4 years.
Oh, wow.
I'll put the symbol up so you get an idea of the danger of buying things that have no earnings and have have a very high valuation. This is a very good company for research, but you'll see here in the last year, it came out at 10. I think it was a SPAC. So it goes all the way up here to $130. Now, this is a company that's not going to tell you they're going to earn a dollar for the next 4 years. And that's what can happen when you buy into stuff. Now, like I say, down here, it's a different story. Actually, I like this thing down here. But the point being, because it's a very good company. But, you know, this is how you get very big trouble, you know, and that's when evaluations, this is not a company that anything changed. What changed in this company? They decided this valuation was a joke. You know, they're still in business. They're still going to be making money. You know, they're going to still be doing stuff. But again, it gives you an idea. And, you know, trading the news, I was showing this earlier on FedEx, and I just looked at a monthly graph. Now, again, we knew FedEx was going to be announcing earnings, and, you know, but look, this thing has gone in the fade mode pretty much since 268, see, 267. So you got a sell signal here. It's been negative all the way.
Yeah.
It's another version of Evergarde. Mm. You know, Evergarde's in the news now. Oh, believe me, FedEx will be in the news tonight.
It already is.
Actually. Yeah. Well, I'm saying, I'm sure it's in the news tonight, but you know what? If you just use a simple 1 month graph, you know, this thing was very much going in that direction in the first place. So, you know, Wally, you made some great points, and I wanted to get to this before we run out of time on some of the travel stuff. So let's get into that real quick, because I am a believer that this, you know, again, I'm going on a trip myself. So obviously I'm talking my own game, huh? Mm-hmm. But, you know, what did I do when I went on my trip? I went on Expedia. So let's see Expedia. And I'm going to do everything that I just did. And maybe I'm a prototype of what's going to be happening. So there's Expedia. These guys put my deal together. And as you can see, I'll go to a 1 year graph and you can see there's a lot of real estate to go. Okay. So Expedia is where I did my trip. And obviously I'm not the only guy doing it, or the people think I'm not going to be the only guy doing it. Okay.
Yep.
And your RSI on it is nice and rising. Okay. So after I took my plane, and I had to get on a plane. So let's go over to AAL and you'll see that this one also is trying to turn up as well. So this is an airline stock. Did you have any other airlines you liked?
No, actually it was just AAL. That was pretty much it. Yeah. But we were talking about
there's others that look good, but again, the concept is you got to fly someplace, right?
Sure. But we're talking about Uber, DoorDash, and stuff like that too.
You want a car, right? So you want a car. So let's go see what Avis and Budget's doing. And they're looking pretty good, huh?
Very good.
Okay. And then after you get there, you got to sleep someplace. So why don't we use the Marriott?
Yeah, I like how you're going about this.
It's reality. I'm one guy. And I went to San Francisco and Laguna about 3 weeks ago for the first time since I went to Hawaii in January of 2020. And, you know, people do like to do things. I'm one of them. And so now I'm going on another trip. And basically, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people are going to be doing if this COVID thing is transitioning. You know, yeah. I think that, I mean, this is the way I hope it works out. You know, what could turn these charts around is we have a flu season that just blows people away.
Now, what about restaurants? Would you look into restaurants too?
People aren't going to get the flu in August and September.
No.
We're not going to get it. They're going to get it in October, November, December. As the season changes.
Exactly.
The guy was asking me where I was from, and I went to Boston College. And believe me, when you're in Boston, you know there's a change of season.
Oh, yes, you do.
That is the poster child for change of season.
Now, what about restaurants? Would you look into restaurants too with this whole
thing? Yeah, I was going to say Darden looked pretty good. What was Darden's symbol?
D-A-R, I believe.
It is. No, that's Darling. That's supposed to be good too. But D-R-I.
D-R-I, okay.
Yeah, let's see what they look like because you got to eat. Yeah, above the averages. Looks like it wants to pop. Where's the RSI? RSI's popping. Yeah, so you got to eat something. So again, this is the reopening trade that I believe in more than, you know, maybe the cruise ships, although I think Carnival looks okay. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, Carnival looks okay. It looks like it could start popping. So if you want to do the reopening, just think about anything you have not been doing that you might want to do, like go out to eat, go on a boat ride, take an airplane ride, stay at a hotel, and rent a car. And that's probably enough, right?
Absolutely. No, I agree with it. I like that logic. Very well said, man.
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, not only am I saying it, it appears the charts are starting to matriculate in that direction.
Excellent.
One other area that we talked about, and it's starting to happen again, it's energy. And, you know, if you think we're going to 80 on crude, like a lot of people think, then there could be something here. Now, this thing just filled the gap. So I'm from the I don't trust you yet. Because, listen, I was very, very constructive on this when we were up at 50 here, because didn't that look like it was going someplace?
Yeah, it was. It was.
And then it was like, oh, no, we're not going anywhere. And then it now just came back and filled the gap. So really, for me to get interested in this, get me above 51. Because if you get above 51, look at all that real estate up there.
Yeah.
If you can't get above 51, I don't want to be in here at 42, because all of a sudden OPEC announced that they're putting they're opening up their strategic reserves, you know what I mean, or something like that. The better looking one is XOP, the producers and the exploration people. But again, just filled the gap. Love to see it close above 90.
I like that.
But this one, and if you go, hey, you want to see something exciting, you go back 5 years and you see there's a lot of real estate here.
Wow.
You know, so we're not talking about chump change. And look at that blue line. That's an uptrend, man. And you know what? They dipped it underneath just to stop everybody out and get everybody out, but they never got the line to move down. So you got a 70 place there. But realistically, if this thing breaks above 90, you don't want it underneath these averages again. Yep. So buy above 90, out underneath 80 would be a reasonable thing to do. And you take out 100 and it's going to look like Bo Jackson when he used to run past everybody.
No, I
remember Howie Long said when I played with Bo Jackson and he got past the secondary, all I saw was butts and thighs. Many people may not remember Bo Jackson, but if you don't, go on YouTube and on see what a great running back looks like. You know?
Yeah. Now that's a really good thing. Now the thing is, it might take a while for it to get up there too as well, which I think people would not be patient enough to like really capture that massive move that it's looking like it's getting ready to do.
Yeah, because it already gave you a double from the lows. You know, they gave you the buy signal at 50 and it went to 100.
Yep.
And that's a $50 move. Let's see here, 50 times 61.8% is about $30. So here, check it out. You went from 50 on the breakout to 100. That's a $50 move. 61% Fibonacci pullback is $30. You went from 100 down to 70. Fibonacci pullback is done.
Yep.
So, yeah, like I say, jury's still out until you get above 90 and 100. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if these guys at Goldman Sachs with their forecast of $80 in the fourth quarter, if that's accurate, there's something to be had here.
What about financials? I know you mentioned financials on Monday. What do you think about that?
I'm not on them. You know, I'm not on them because interest rates, I was just looking at the difference between the 10-year at 130 something and the 30-year, which is 186, is like nothing. And so how can they possibly make that much money if the now again you're getting a jump today, God bless you, but this thing broke, this fever broke at 92 here. Now it's holding here. This is a 5-year graph, it's holding this, so that's still good. But I'd like to see, this is a Vanguard ETF. Let me put up some individual stocks, let's see what they look like. JP Morgan, the usual suspects. Yeah, so as long as it stays above 153 now, and if it can get back above 160, or actually even one where are these averages at, 157. Yeah, if we can start trading above 157, you're probably on to something, because you had the pullback. RSI, yeah, so that could work. And BAC, but you know, JP Morgan's kind of the Cadillac. Yeah, same idea though, right? You need to get above you need to get above 41, and you want to hold the lows of 38.
Exactly.
And there's a regional one that I've been looking at because it pays a very, very high dividend, which of course could be cut, but it's not now being cut, so that's why I'm looking at it. And this is a community bank called New York Community Bank, NYCB. And as you can see, it has a nice RSI. It's got a nice little trend here. As long as it stays above 12, and if it gets above 13, there's a lot of real estate up here too. But this thing also has a pretty solid dividend. So somebody told me it's 5% or better. So, you know, when you get zero in the bank, looking for things that pay dividends is not the worst thing to do with part of your capital.
Absolutely.
You know, but anything else you were looking at, Wally? It seems to me like the restart trade and the energy trade could be the two best ones to look at.
Yeah, after you showed me what you showed as far as those research trades, I thought, you know, we need to definitely be paying attention to those. Absolutely.
And this one here could be the third key, but I still don't trust it because, boy, this is a 5-year graph on the Russell. Everybody tells me this Russell is going to take off. Well, if it does, it's really going to probably go because it's been in a trading range of 215 and 230 for months and months, just like the transport. But since the transport broke, I'm concerned that this thing is going to break unless we get above 225. 225, then I change my tune on this, because I'm fearful that
why it's 225 instead of 230?
Well, 230 I'd add. Yeah. 225. See, all the averages come in at 223, 224. So if you hit 225 and change, that's probably enough for me.
Okay.
To take a stab, my first stab, and then above 230, I'd be adding, and then I'd let it ride.
Makes sense.
But here's what my fear is, because these things were kind of connected for a long time, transports and Russell. And so this one doesn't look quite as good. This one doesn't look quite as good. And even on this one here, you know, it's still, now that could be a low. That looks like a little island low, right?
Yeah, it's possible.
But it's possible, and possible is not what I'm interested in, you know?
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is it broke down that resistance that we've seen, where it looks like multiple bottoms and stuff like that. So if you can get back above that, then that would be interesting. But like I said, moving averages too is just trending downwards at this stage.
Yeah. And a lot of the transportation stuff is, another thing, I was over in LA near San Pedro. They have a fish market over there that's really great. And we were looking, because it was outdoor dining, we were looking at the container boats in the harbor. And there were 9 million containers sitting there, but I didn't see anybody moving anything off. So I mean, it doesn't look like, it's not like we don't have the containers in the dock and in the harbors. It looks like just nobody's unloading them for whatever reason. I just thought that was kind of weird. But this is a railroad stock, just to give you an idea of why that index has rolled over.
Yeah, you know? No, actually I used to be in CSX expecting it to do well, but once it turned over, I said, you know what, get out. Let's wait and see what happens.
It's perplexing too, because of e-commerce, you were thinking that anything that's transporting anything would do well,
and that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, but something's going on behind the curtain that maybe we don't know about. Is there a slowdown coming? Is there a situation, some other situation coming? That's what I'm trying to say, is it's a little weird. You know, it's a little weird to get that kind of weakness in a market that, as you can see on the S&P, has hardly lost 5%.
Yeah, that's,
you know, and even on, consumer XLY, this is the consumer discretionary. I mean, this thing is back on the bicycle, see? Yep. And, at a very short period of time under the bicycle, you know?
Yeah.
But so if this thing is going to 190, that means the consumer's out there buying stuff. If the consumer's out there buying stuff, you got to ship them, right? And if you're going to ship them, you got to use the trucks and you got to use the rail. So bottom line is, that's why it's perplexing to see the consumer discretionary sector, which is indicating people are buying things, against a transportation sector that looks like nobody's doing anything.
So, yeah. And this concept of even thinking, oh, because it's on e-commerce and everything, it's like, you still have to transport everything anyway. My kid just ordered something and the package is coming, it's still transported. So
yeah,
you know, we can't just ignore just because, oh, e-commerce is booming or anything like that, and then say, oh yeah, then we shouldn't expect transportation to do well. They still are doing stuff. So the question is, why is it breaking down?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm trying to say, and only time will tell why. So you know, we'll have to see exactly what they did here. So they took they're taking the futures home down here at around 43.88, so not dropping too bad, but this is a five-day graph. Yeah, still looking okay as long as it stays above 43.70. And the 1 day probably rolled over a little bit, but not much. Yeah, you after the Fed announcement, you got about a $30 drop, and then it came back up, and then it came back down. So turn around Thursday, one way or the other, it'll be interesting, because you know, I see Tuesday and Thursday being the two big days of the week. So turn around Tuesday and which we saw, because we had lows on Monday, and then turn around Thursday is you know, if these people don't believe in this rally, they might want to book before the weekend.
Yeah, good point.
So I think tomorrow's going to be big. Well, I'm just going to close out, and then you can close out, Wally, and then give it back to David. This is optionprofessor.com, OptionProfessor.com. You go to the website, you put your email in, and you will get a weekly market update where I take all my experience and knowledge, and I try to give you a straight talk on everything from the stock market to the bond market to international investing to the energy markets, the gold, silver, and crypto, as well as foreign exchange and income markets. So since I follow it all and it comes like a second language to me, it's not very heavy lifting for me to turn that into a report every week. And I use a lot of the technicals like I talked about today. So optionprofessor.com, and you can get that. And then from here on out, I'm going to be encouraging people to email us at optionprofessor@gmail.com. And then basically put some contact information in there. And then I'm more than willing to spend some time with any questions you have, or if there's anything on on your mind that you might want more clarity on, you could email us and I could give you a hand with that too. So this is Option Professor signing out for today. I'm going to turn it back over to Wally for a couple of minutes and then David, and we'll see you guys at the next webinar. And thanks for showing up here. And again, Wally, good talking to you again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Just to close it out, RightSideTrading.com/deals was the offer that I presented earlier today. Anybody can take advantage of that. RightSideTrading.com/deals. You'll see the offer we had on there. And that's pretty much it. It was great talking to Jim. And Dave, again, thank you so much for having us on the call. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you.